So actually, my mother said there's no sponsor, so I'm going to sponsor today because it's my husband's birthday today. And it happens to be Hashgacha Pratis that he actually really embodies the idea of the Sicha. So like, there's one thing you can say that, like, I think, yeah, it's very fitting for him. So I will sponsor it in the honor of his birthday. So this week is the Shabbos, is the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. And so Rosh Hashanah is Aleph Tishrei, which means that it is Rosh Chodesh, right? It's the new month. But we don't bless the month in Shul. We don't do the regular Shabbos Mevarchim bracha in Shul. And so the traditional reason, explanation for this is that what are we doing? We are, along with a bunch of other things that we do in Tishrei, I mean, leading up to Tishrei, is that we try to trick the Satan, right? Because Tishrei is a time of din, it's a time of judgment, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So the Satan is in, it's his favorite day. He likes to sit and prosecute and bring up all the bad stuff about the Jews. So we want to trick him so that he doesn't know when he should show up to court. So we, you know, we don't blow the shofar in our Rosh Hashanah, and we also don't bless the month. Because if we bless the month, we'll trigger his antenna that it's coming, and we just want to trick him and prevent him from showing up. That's a whole discussion, the whole idea. Like, it's like, it's kind of confusing. What does it mean, tricking the Satan? Like, how is he? We do it every year. He's still falling for it for the past 2,000 plus years. But we're not going to talk about that today. But we're actually, Chassidus gives another answer to why we don't bless the month, this month. And this is a teaching the Alter Rebbe brings in the name of the Maggid, who brings it in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, that Hashem blesses the month of Tishrei. It's the first month of the year. So we need an extra dosage of blessings, extra strong dosage of blessings. So Hashem is the one, Hashem himself blesses the month of Tishrei, so we don't need a blessing. So we don't have to say our blessings because Hashem does it. And it's also that in the month of Tishrei, what he's doing is empowering us to bless the rest of the months. So Hashem himself comes, blesses this month, and thereby empowers us to bless the subsequent months, right? So then every other month, the 11 months that follow, we now are empowered to bless from Hashem's blessings in the month of Tishrei, that we do the Shabbos, right? And the Baal Shem Tov goes on to explain what is the blessing. So every month we say, you know, Yechadasheu, Kadosh Baruch Hu, et cetera, et cetera. That's the blessing that we say. What's the blessing that Hashem says before the month of Tishrei? So the Baal Shem Tov says, the blessing he says is actually the parsha this week, Atam Nitzavim Ayin. You're standing here today, and it's a parsha that is actually full of blessings. And so the parsha itself is the blessing that Hashem says, Hayim, often the word Yain, the day. What is the day? The day is Rosh Hashanah, right? So we're standing here, Hayam, right before Rosh Hashanah, and the blessings that follow are in the parsha are the blessings that Hashem gives us to bless the month. Clear so far? Yeah, okay. So if this is the case, that the blessings are the parsha, there's an interesting question that arises, because the interesting thing about Parshas Nitzavim is that Nitzavim is often read together with Parshas Vayelech. Most of the time it's read together with Parshas Vayelech. And there are a number of Parshas that are either combined or split up throughout the year, right? And regarding these Parshas, there's different, Rav Sadia Gaon explains that some of these Parshas are two different Parshas, that some years we need to combine them to get through the whole Parsha. And some of these parshas are actually one parsha that some years we need to divide to stretch out the parshas long enough. Make sense, right? So some of them are two separate parshas that sometimes we have to combine to make it all fit. And some of the parshas are one long parsha that in certain cases we have to split them up. So Nitzavim Vayelech is actually one parsha. And it's, if you read through it, you see they're actually very short when they're split up. And the reason they're so short is because really it's one parsha, and then some years we split them up because we need the extra week. And this year is actually one of those years that we split up the parsha and we read it as two separate parshas, right? So if that's the case, and we said that the parsha of Nitzavim is the blessing for the year, right? Is our blessing for the new year, for the new month. Aren't we missing out on the years that we read Vayelech after Rosh Hashanah? It's like, oh, I'm getting shortchanged. I'm only getting half of the blessings, right? If they're really one parsha. And this year we're splitting it up. We're reading the rest of Vayelech. We're reading Vayelech after Rosh Hashanah. Then I'm missing out on some of my blessings, right? So how are we going to understand this, that we're missing out on some of the blessings? So in order to understand this, we're going to take a step back and we're going to look at this whole idea that Nitzavim and Vayelech are one parsha. And there's another question that comes up about this. It's interesting to say that they're one parsha because in general, we say that a name is what represents the entire... Hi. A name is what represents the entire, it's okay. The name is what represents the parsha. So it contains like the theme of the parsha. And when it comes to Nitzavim and Vayelech, it seems that they're actually saying two opposite things. Nitzavim, what does Nitzavim mean? Atam Nitzavim Mayim. You are standing here today, standing. And the commentaries explain that standing means like a firm stance, that you're like standing before the king in a certain... She's waving to herself on the camera. That standing is a certain like firmness, that you a strength, right? And you're in your space and you're like not moving, not budging, stubborn, a stubborn stance, right? A strong stance. Vayelech means to go. Vayelech is walking, right? So standing and walking, they seem to be two opposite motions, right? Either you're standing or you're walking, right? You can't be walking and standing at the same time. They're two opposite motions, right? So it's interesting that these two parshiyos would be put together. Because if one parsha represents a strength and a stance versus the other parsha represents going and traveling and change, right? Because when you're traveling, things are constantly changing. When you stand, everything's staying the same, right? So the Rebbe explains that these two ideas come hand in hand because these are the two parts in our Avodas Hashem that always need to go hand in hand. On the one hand, when it comes to our Avodas Hashem, we need to have a certain strength, a certain firmness, a certain lack of change, in the sense that Hashem gave us the Torah. Hashem told us what we need to do. And even when we're faced with opposition and the world around us is changing, we stand firm to our tradition, right? And we stand strong in the face of change. But at the same time, you can't just be in a state of, in a static state. Judaism requires constant growth, constant change. And there's space even within the halacha that that things evolve as the world evolves. And as you evolve as a person, right? Your whole observance needs to be able to change. It can't just be stuck in the same place. And you see that often there's people who are good at one or the other, right? There are Jews who are maybe, you know, like super traditional, and they're going to stand so firm and stand so strong. But sometimes, not always, but sometimes that is accompanied with a fear of anything different and a fear of any change. And even on a certain level, a fear of growth. Because once I start, you know, looking to change and grow, I might feel threatened, that I might feel like that strength, that stance is threatened. And then there are Jews who are really good at the changing thing, right? They're all about, you know, let's make our religion fit into with the world and have people accept us and see us in a positive way. Right? And, you know, we have to change to match what's going on around us. But sometimes when you're so obsessed with the change and fitting into what is to how the world is evolving, you lose that strength of the tradition and the strength of what's true. So how do we marry these two movements, the movement of standing and the movement of going? How do we like bring these two things together, the tradition, but also the evolution and the going from strength to strength, the growth, the personalization of Judaism? So the Rebbe actually brings three examples of like the main parts of our Aveda. First main part of our Aveda is within Torah, right? And learning Torah. So we see in Torah itself, there really are these two ideas so strongly. We have Torah Shebichtav. Torah Shebichtav, there's no room to really like change any part of it, right? The words are as they are. In Tanakh, the words are as they are without any change. And to the extent that if you like get up in the morning and you want to say words of Tanakh and you don't understand what the words mean. So you don't, let's say you don't understand Hebrew so well, and so you don't understand what the words mean, you would have to still say a Berachah Satera on the words of Tanakh that you're saying. Because the words themselves, they stand, the words themselves, the fact that they're so unchanging, the holiness of them represents the fact that I don't even need to understand it, right? There's a certain absolute holiness within these words. And therefore, even if I don't understand what I'm saying, just by saying the words, I'm tapping into that absoluteness. I'm tapping into the godliness that is within these words. As opposed to Tarasha Baal Peh, and offshoot of Tarasha Baal Peh is all the chidushim that all Jews have ever had on Torah, which is something that is encouraged. We're encouraged to be mechadish in Torah. We're encouraged to have our own ideas about Torah and to come up with new ideas. And then you see all of the Gemara and the Mishnah, it's all debates between different people with their own understandings and their own ideas that fit into their own worldview. And you know, Shivan Pandam Latera, there's a million ways that you can understand everything, right? So when it comes to Torah Sheval Peh, if you want to make a bracha, if you want to start citing some Gemara, you only make a bracha if you understand it. Because over there, there's a fluidity. It's not absolute, right? So there's a side of Torah that is fluid, that has space for change. But at the same time, when you're in that space for change, I can't just make anything up that I want to make up, right? Halacha gives us guidelines. We say at the end of Karbanos every day, the list of rules that we use to be mechadish in Torah, to come up with a new idea in Torah, right? And there are, you know, precedents, and there is a sort of structure within that you can be mechadish, right? So you can't just say, oh, really, when the Torah is saying this, I don't know, I don't have, my brain's not working well enough to come up with an example of this, but basically you can't just make anything up. You are supposed to be mechadish, you are supposed to personalize it, you are supposed to make it your own, but it's within a certain framework of halacha. And the amazing thing is that if it is within that framework, what happens is that what you come up with, if it's within the framework of halacha, it becomes Torah. That's what it says. Like, Kalmasha Talmud Basak, we discussed this before Shavuos. Anything that a student is mechadish in Torah, it's as if Hashem gave that at Har Sinai. Right? So it's extremely valid. What you come up with yourself, when you use your own mind, when you have this action of going and movement in Torah, it's as if it becomes almost absolute. It becomes as if what God gave us at Har Sinai, as opposed to if you're doing it outside the framework of halacha, then it's not Torah at all, right? So that's, again, the marriage of these two ideas. We're innovating, we're moving, we're personalizing, but within a framework and within the absolute. What?
Like electricity. We know about electricity,
right? Absolutely, right. And so some people might say, oh, if there's no electricity, we can just use it as we please or whatever. But instead, we're looking, we derive principles, and yeah, we definitely, that's something that changes. And in general, you know, so that's just in the area of Torah. I think also, let's say, as our world has become, let's say, much more psychoconscious, right? So what we do is we look into Torah to support ideas that will support our mental well-being. That was never an idea that was like necessarily people discussed all the time, right? You know, finding, people didn't have time, you were just trying to stay alive, but like trying to, you know, pursuing happiness and all these other ideas of, it was never something that was necessarily discussed because it wasn't on people's minds. As the world opens up new ideas, we then meet with a Torah viewpoint of those ideas, right? So it could be very practical, like my mother said about electricity, or it could also be theoretical, you know? And we're molding, again, within the framework of halacha and within the framework of something that exists already, we are personalizing and growing with the Torah. Okay, moving on to like the second main structure of our Aveda, the second pillar of our Aveda would be tefillah, right? We see something so interesting in tefillah. In tefillah, you have the nusach, right? The nusach means that it's prescribed, this is what you say. And the nusach has like, there's halachic obligations connected to the nusach. Like every person needs to say Shema every day. And every person is supposed to say two amidas every day. That's like the halachic minimum of what a person is supposed to say every day. And even the amida itself, though, so in the nusach itself, we see that every Shemona Esrei starts and ends the same way. But in the middle, it changes based on the time. So Shabbos davening is different than weekday davening, and weekday davening is different than Rosh Hashanah, which is different than Yom Kippur, right? So the middle of them, even the time of day, to a certain extent, we change the format, the structure of the tefillah. So there are certain things that are like standing firm. Then there are things that are personalized. And even within that structure, I think we can also take it a step further and say, you know, there is a davening that is prescribed by God for us to say. And then there's davening that I have to do that's, first of all, the kavana and the headspace behind the davening, where does that come from? That comes from me. And that's where I personalize it to myself. And even just like the davening that we should, the engaging with Hashem that we should be doing outside of davening or even within davening, but like, you know, the personal engagement, that's also necessary. Right? So we have the nusach that's provided for us. That's like, okay, here's the certain prescribed words that always work, right? Just because every single person says the words, I love you, doesn't mean it means the same thing when I say it to this person or when I say it to that person or when that person says it to that person, right? So there's certain words that we know, they're a formula that work. It's something that stands strong for itself, right? But then there's all the other things that I do that personalize it, that personalize my avodas tefillah, with these two actions of mitzvahim, standing firm, and vayelech, changing, constantly coming together, right? And then sort of the last pillar of our avodas Hashem would be do things that we do, mitzvahs, right? And we see the same thing within mitzvahs. Within mitzvahs, you're not allowed to change, as in you're not allowed to add and subtract from mitzvahs. You can't decide this is a new mitzvah that we have to do today. That's one of the, it's a halacha of Baal Teis, if you're not allowed to add. We can't come up with a whole new list of mitzvahs, right? But there's so much room to personalize within the mitzvah itself, right? The hiddur mitzvah, we could beautify mitzvahs, we do them with our own personality, with our own way, and everyone has their own mitzvahs that they connect to more, so that's where they'll probably have more hiddur mitzvah. Right, so if someone loves sukkahs, they'll probably have a beautiful sukkah. And if everyone has the thing that someone loves Shabbos, then they'll make their Shabbos as beautiful as possible. Right, so it's a reflection of yourself within your avaida. So these are just some examples of how we can have these two methods of avaida coming together. The movement, so we have the movement and how I make it my own and personalized within an absolute system, right? And so why is it that we have these two movements? Is because what is the whole point of our avodah? What's the whole point of Torah Mitzvahs? It's the marriage of us and Hashem, Hashem gave us these commandments. Hashem wants us to do this. We're working on building a relationship with Hashem. Hashem is absolute, right? Hashem is non-changing. Hashem is, was, and will always be, and will never change. We, on the other hand, are constantly changing. That's the nature of the human being. We're constantly growing. We go through different seasons. We're always evolving and changing. So if we want to be working on a relationship with Hashem, we need to have these two elements. The elements from Hashem's perspective, where things are absolute. So we work within a certain absolute framework. We have to have a certain strength and conviction in what we're doing and not allowing outer forces to influence us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, we have to recognize that, hey, it's a human being on the other end of this. So I can't just force myself into this like black hole of religion and not have any room for change. I am a changing person. So I need to find the change and I need to be able to personalize my relationship with Hashem, right? Hashem is absolute, Hashem is not changing, but my understanding of Hashem is constantly changing. The more I learn, the more my brain develops, the more I mature, my understanding of Hashem will evolve. Is that the absolute understanding? No, but that's the whole point. The point is that we're supposed to find the movement within the rigidity. And finish off with one point. Okay, so before we actually finish off, going back to what we started off saying, how we're before Rosh Hashanah, right? So we have Nitzavim and Vayelech, and aren't we missing out on half the blessings, right? When we, like this year, when we read Vayelech after Rosh Hashanah, so we're missing out on some of the blessings. What did the Baal Shem Tov say? The Baal Shem Tov said that Hashem blesses, and what does he also do? He empowers us to bless the following months. So Nitzavim, the standing firm, the absolute, who's that? That's Hashem. Vayelech is the power for us to continue blessing in our own personalized human way, because Vayelech means going, right? I'm worthy human being that's constantly changing and evolving and growing. So from our angle, we are empowered to bless the rest of the months. That empowerment doesn't need to be expressed the Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. It just needs to be expressed before Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, which is when we're going to bless the following month, right? So it's okay if we read it after Rosh Hashanah. The portion of being empowered to keep on blessing, it's okay if we read after Rosh Hashanah because it's for the following months of the year, right? So we're not losing out. We're just splitting it up. Right? We're just splitting up these two motions. And so just to finish off, just very briefly explaining another connection of this idea to Rosh Hashanah. So on Rosh Hashanah, what are we doing? Chassidus explains, moving a little bit away from the idea of like, it's a day of judgment, Hashem is, it's a day of din. Rather, Chassidus explains that it's a day when we renew God's interest in the world. That we have Hashem recommit to this project of world, right? Every time, if you decided to create a business, right? And, oh, right, or we decorate your house. But the redecorating is a job that finishes at a certain point, right? I mean, it could be continuous. It could go on and on forever. But in this case, let's say we're talking about you have something and you have like, I guess it could work with redecorating. You have a vision for something and you're doing it, right? So you have the business or you have your home remodeling. At certain points, you do like an account of, okay, is this working out? Is this worth it for me, right? Because a business or my remodeling, is it going in the direction I want it to go, right? Because if it's not going in the direction I want it to go, I lose my interest and I'm not going to put all the time and money and effort that it takes to keep this endeavor going, right? So Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, he looks at the world and he's like, am I interested in keeping this project up? Like, is this worth it? Should I invest my interest into this world? And, you know, however much it's working according to your vision is how much you're going to invest yourself into it. So if the business or the decorating is going in the direction that you envisioned it to go, then your heart becomes more and more and more involved, You invest yourself personally so much more when it's going in the way that you want it to go. So when Hashem looks, like Hashem sort of takes a step back and is looking at this business venture, he's like, how is this, like, are they moving toward the completion of the mission, or are they, have they sort of just like forgotten about me? Because that's going to determine how much I choose to invest. And when we like blow the shofar, we sort of like pull Hashem's, what we're doing is we're drawing the interest back. Not just the energy. Not just like the fact that the world exists, but the fact that the world exists with Hashem being invested and interested and personally involved in the world, right? So in order to do that, we need to sort of spark God's desire to create the world. In Hasidus, desire is always sort of divided into two parts. There's two parts of desire. There's taina, which means pleasure, and there's ratzin, which means technically defined as desire. Pleasure is the internal factor of desire. Why do we desire something? We desire something because it gives us pleasure. It gives us tainug. Tainug, though, the motion of tainug is something that is very internal. Pleasure is something that's very internal. It's something that isn't. It's very. It's a very subtle idea. It's hard to explain. But it's not. Pleasure is not exciting. It's not something you can see on the outside. It's not something that. It's a very deep internal state. The internal state of feeling absolute peace. That's what like ultimate pleasure is. It's very, very, very deep, right? And then there's ratzin. Ratzin actually comes from the word ruts, desire. So desire is when we're in the active pursuit of pleasure. And then the pleasure is when you are in the state of peace once you've achieved the ratzin, right? So ratzin is pursuit, pleasure is peace. And these two forms of avaida representing these two motions. There's the mitzavim, which is standing firm, which, like you said, is from God's, because Hashem is absolute. So we stick to certain absolutes. You don't see change so much when you're talking about standing firm, right? It's something that's much more subtle and settled. As opposed to the constant change that we're going through, that's the ratzin, that's the pursuit. And so by engaging in these avaitas, we're triggering God's tainug and ratzin, and we trigger his desire to be in this world, right? And through our connecting to him on his level, and then connecting to him on our level, right? That would be the nitzavim and vayelech. We're triggering his desire to come down into this world, right? So this year, Rosh Hashanah, we should all, you know, take some time to think, you know, how am I able to, my father came up with a good title for this class. He said, oh, I can't see it over here, but it was something like, how to find my personal path in an absolute truth. Because that's really like, just like sums up the entire thing. We have an absolute truth, and we can't deny the absolute truth. And so we can't change on the elements that are absolutely true. But at the same time, I can't just be living in this state of absolute truth, because then it's not me. If I'm living in absolute truth, then it doesn't matter if it's I'm doing it or somebody else is doing it. And Hashem created me, which means he wants me to be doing it, right? Or you, then he wants you to be doing it. So the point is to be able to find our personal path and find our own language to describe Hashem, to describe Judaism. We need to have our own personal words that we can use, our own personal connections that we can create, our own personal tefillah that we can dive in within this structure. And through doing that, we arouse God's desire to recreate this world. And God willing, this Rosh Hashanah, we shall be blessed with all the blessings so that we're able to do our avodah in the best way possible.
I'm going to answer the question.